It's walking through the dark, the fear, the uncertainty, the dark places. I told a friend, we take notes in the dark places, because then you share with somebody else what those notes were, how they can get through it. You know, how do we get through the field at night? You just walk one foot in front of the other. It's what you do. You take in and you decide that there's nothing here. Here are the facts. This is the truth, and I'm going to move forward.
Welcome to the Generation Youth Podcast, where we ignite the future by empowering our youth. I'm James McLamb, your host, founder, and CEO of Generation Youth, and the author of the best-selling book, Tomorrow's Youth. Whether you're a parent, an educator, youth pastor, or coach, join us as we dive into the pressing issues facing our young people today. Together, we'll unlock the strategies, insights, and inspiration to elevate and equip our next generation. Stay with us, and let's make a difference, one youth at a time.
Welcome to the Generation Youth Podcast. I am James McLamb, and I'm back with another exciting episode. Hey, audience, you're going to love what you're going to hear today. I got to meet Trisha just a couple of weeks ago for the first time, and the excitement that I had afterwards was immense. And so I've been really anticipating this. Welcome, Trisha, to our show.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, first, before we even go farther, we need to shout out the perennial connector for podcast guests for me, Tammy Matheny, as she connected us. So thank you, Tammy, again. So
absolutely.
Well, Trish, our audience loves to hear from our guest about them. They don't want to hear James talk all the time. They want to hear our guest. So if you wouldn't mind, take a few minutes and share with our audience, our community, a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am so excited to be here. I felt the same about the conversation. It brought me some excitement, and I'm always willing to connect with new people. But I am Trisha Fraley, and I am on a quest, I guess you could say, to change the way people look at adversity. I'm also a podcast host, but author, speaker, and did not get here without a few hard fires. It's kind of my brand, is teaching people how to walk through fire. And so I kind of started this journey of inspiring the masses, if you will, and reminding them that the hard things they face are actually meant to build strength. And so I do it through a variety of ways, and I'm just, you know, happy to be on another platform sharing the story.
Well, I love what you said. It's your brand to help people walk through fire, because if you go to this website that for those of you who are watching can see on this, if those of you who are not watching can look into show notes, one of your taglines is grit, determination, and what it takes to walk through fire. That speaks to me a lot, especially as we're working with a younger generation, as parents are trying to help guide them, as teachers to help guide them. And then further on, you talked about the challenging parts of your story are the greatest source of your strength. So share with me what that means. Let's break that down before we dive into how we can help youth with that, because that gets me all excited.
Well, you know, I shared a little bit about my story. Like I said, I didn't get here by way of an easy life. You know, as a young girl, my parents were divorced at a young age, and I started walking through fire when I was like 13 or 14. But it was when I was 16 that I had made a decision to be somebody different. And so I have a real big heart for youth, because that's when my life changed. And I think for a lot of people, they think that they're too young, they're there, but that's not really the case. And my dad was into drugs and alcohol. He wasn't really present. And so as I grew, became a military wife, we had 16 deployments where I was home trying to figure out life. And if any other military people know, nothing easy happens on a deployment. Like, everything falls apart. And so we learned how to adapt to change. And then it was really when, as I mentioned, I lost my younger brother, 25 years old, to a drug overdose. And I hate that that's a conversation that I have to have, but I think it's not one we're having enough of right now. And everybody kept saying, how do you do it? How do you keep the joy? And I looked and I thought, we're not teaching that. We're not teaching the grit that it takes to get up out of bed during a hard season. The smile, the effort that it takes to put in a smile, to just show up when maybe your home life is in turmoil, or when you feel anxious or tension, what does it mean to show up consistently? And you can't learn those things unless you're in the fire. You don't learn grit until you've had a reason to get gritty, I guess. And so whenever I tell people, I'm like, stop looking at that hard thing as an obstacle and look at it as an opportunity to build something in you that you can't build unless you're there. It's like lifting weights. Can't build bigger muscle unless you lift heavier weights. So you've got to get that time under the tension. And I hate it. I hate that that's the way we have to learn, but that's the quickest way to build that strength. And so again, I'm real passionate about it because I've witnessed it in so many areas in my own life that I'm here to keep saying, no, look at it differently. Change the way you look at it because it might be the strength you need for the next season.
You know, you just talked about it. It really was, it spoke to me. You said at 16, you made a decision to change things. What prompted that? Because you said it was a tough time, 13 and 14, and I have a 13-year-old girl, and I understand that whole middle school, first year of high school girl mentality. That's a rough time for young ladies. But what changed at 16? What was the awakening moment for you?
Well, it was honestly, it was a series of things that it was happening. I was the oldest of three, so I was kind of the responsible one trying to take care of stuff. And then when I went to high school, that's a hard, like ninth grade, and you're like, what, who am I? What am I doing? You know, you're trying to discover that. But I started getting involved in things like different clubs that I liked and different stuff. And I came alive in a way that was like, there's a whole nother way of doing things that I might not be aware of. I love my family with my whole heart, but maybe their model wasn't exactly what I was thinking. Maybe just because my home life was in turmoil didn't mean that I couldn't create a new one. So I started finding mentors, coaches, teachers, people that I looked up to, started admiring what is it that I liked in them? What is it that I was trying to model? And then I just made that decision. And I realized that in order to do that, I was going to have to forgive my dad for things that were unheard of. I was very involved in church. So that helped me a lot because I had a lot of mentors that showed me that maybe the village isn't necessarily your family and that there are other people that can care for you. And so I started creating this village of people that supported and encouraged me and realized that like the steps that I needed to take. And I was like, if I'm going to be different, then I have to act differently. And sometimes that's unfamiliar. So I had to do things that weren't precedented in my family. I had to start with forgiveness. I had to start setting goals and dreams. I was the first of my family to go to college right after high school. It hadn't been done before in my family. Yes, they were successful in their own right, but they didn't do the model that I was looking at. They were all nurses or something different. And I was like, I'm going to business school. They were like, cool, Trish. So I had to dare that thing inside of me that was starting to come alive was there on purpose. But that took some digging and it took a village. It took mentors, people speaking life in me and nurturing that side of me that I didn't know was even there myself. And so once I leaned into that, it was full-fledged. That was it. And so that was short, long answer for kind of where it started.
Let's take this conversation to if someone who is young is listening to it, or maybe a parent who wants to share this with their teen, their youth that they have at home that's struggling with going through a fire. What would you say to them now to help them find that opportunity? Because I can tell you, you know, when they're that age and they're going through the fire, they can't see it.
No.
Especially if there's not someone pouring into them. You had the forethought to say, I need to find somebody to help me.
Right.
But I don't see that kind of forethought. I don't see that typically in youth today that they're looking for someone. You know where they look. You know, they said that this is kind of related, but they said the three most common places that Generation Z looks to find out information about religion are TikTok, YouTube, and Netflix. So if they're going to those three to find out about religion, that's where they're going to help find this other stuff. So what would you say to them right now?
I cannot imagine, I think we talked about this before, the things they're facing with social media and the fact that in 1 second you can find somebody that is very truthful and you can see a YouTube video and then the next video could be completely contradictory. And so I think there's something that's really important from a parent youth perspective is that one thing that was always instilled in me, where there was this like truth of like, we had a foundation. And I say, like I told you, when I looked outward, I didn't know that I needed those people until they were showing up. And one day that's when I was like, wait a second, when my tire got flat and I didn't have a dad that helped me, there was somebody else there. So it was just this awareness. And I think it's, if you're for a parent looking at a child, they're doing it different. They're like, I might've mentioned to you or somebody recently, like there is a different model now. They are looking for their worth and other things in what they're consuming. So we have to be mindful of the things that we're consuming to create balance. because like I tell my family, like we don't sometimes even know what brings us joy. And that's something that isn't done from a computer. And so if there's something that makes them come alive in other areas, we have to start noticing that and allowing them the freedom to talk about it. I have a little boy that one loves like reptiles and science and the other one will love sports. But when they start to talk about it, they come alive in that way. And I think there's this youth who feel this pressure to figure it out. They need to know everything. And they're afraid to say, I love airplanes and I want to learn about airplanes because it isn't maybe not modeled or maybe it's different. And I think if we just as parents and even as children allow space to just be and to create and to think together, and that looks different, I think, for everybody. It's whether it's dinner at the table or walking together or just saying, how was your day at the end of the day? It was for me the small, steady, consistent moments of the leaders in my life that continually showed up. Then I remembered, oh my gosh, when I looked back, I was like, I was never alone. And I didn't realize that until I looked backward. And so I think as a parent, you might feel like you're failing. And they're like, well, I did that wrong again today. But I tell people, just go again. Hey, all right, so you hate science, but do you love math? No, hate math. Oh my gosh, but drawing, look at that. It's paying attention that maybe you didn't notice that your daughter loved to draw and she's drawing all the time, but that's nothing that she gets to exercise. I think it's helping our children and kids see what makes them come alive. It doesn't have to be right. It doesn't have to be consistent, but then it teaches that muscle that they dare to believe that something inside them was created on purpose. Maybe the art or football or whatever that is for us is our thing. And then when we start to see that we're created for a purpose, we start to move in that purpose. And that's when I became a leader within my youth group. And then I was like, oh, wait, I had these mentors. What if I kept going? And that's where it starts, as you dip your toe in the water.
Yeah.
And when somebody recognizes the toe, they're like, hey, what do you want to swim for the day? And then you get to see. But even if it turns out to be a failure, the kids go, it's cool. I did that, liked it, but I don't have to stay there. You know, I studied at the vet's office. I thought I was gonna be a vet. I was like, bump, nah, I'm out. I'm not going to the medical field. But we learn that failure isn't the final step. It actually is a curve to keep us on the path we were meant to be on. So it's just baby steps and paying attention to what makes you come alive, I think.
Two things jumped out to me. One is not kind of related to our conversation, but we just said, I went to a vet, but I'm not going to be a vet, knowing the backstory that now you're on the farm.
I know.
I'm going to have an ag background. Every farmer is a vet.
Everyone. Just, isn't it funny how Ryan's a sense of humor?
And the other thing is, and I wrote this down, you said it right at the beginning, with, is they're looking for their worth in what they're consuming. Mm-hmm. That really jumped out at me and speaks volumes because, you know, Mr. Ziegler used to say that you want to put the pure, the power, and the positive in you. They have to monitor what you take in. And we're letting them access things at ages they're not prepared for.
Mm-mm, no. That gives me chills.
And we're really allowing them to, it affects their self-image. It affects their ability to develop that resilience that we want so much in them, that grit, that determination that you talk about. That's powerful on looking for their worth and what they're consuming.
Well, and we all, even as adults, if you think about it, we all want to know where we fit in this world. Like, where do we fit?
Yeah.
Where do I go? So what we do is, unfortunately, with the algorithm, it says, you like this, let's watch more of it. And so maybe as a young girl, I'm watching her makeup tutorial and now I'm going to see them consistently. Now it's going to show up consistently. And the more that I sit here, I'm like, next thing you know, I'm buying all the makeup because, oh my gosh, my skin doesn't look like theirs. How is it so perfect? And before you know it, you've gotten into this cycle where it's like, it was told to you and we don't even realize the brainwashing that's happening. So to remove yourself and to be present, I think, I don't know how many people right now listening could actually sit still for 5 minutes quietly with nothing going on without feeling anxious of some sort. If you ever just turn a timer for 5 minutes, how long that is to just sit in silence, to do nothing. And when did we lose that? The ability to have peace in our own minds. And I think it's something that we're going to have to be intentional about as leaders and people moving forward, because kids are now overstimulated. They're overstimulated. My 10-year-old, mom, what should I draw on the birthday card? I'm like, a balloon. What do you mean? Why is that a hard question? But we've lost the creativity because we're being told everything now. The world tells us everything we need and we don't have to think for ourselves anymore.
Not only that, I think parents are trying to help. They're over helping.
Yeah.
out of love, out of concern, but it's almost too overhelping. I want to give them everything. Right. I want to make them be better. My wife got in a conversation through social media about, you know, when did it become a norm for parents to buy their children cars that are nicer than what they're driving? And the argument was, why wouldn't I? I want them to have something better. And our argument has always been, we need to start them off with realistic expectations of what it is. And before we jump into them and let them earn the right to do stuff, let them do that. So there is some of that helicopter parenting that goes on there.
Right. And I think it comes from the way we were raised. We want them to have better. I think it's a natural flow, is we want our kids to be better and have better than we are. But then where's the balance? Like, it's hard to watch a kid struggle. You don't want your child to struggle, especially if you felt struggle. So then we're like, no, I want to protect them from struggle, but maybe, just maybe. Like, I mean, when we taught them how to walk, we had to let them fall a bunch of times to let them try, because they can't build the strength in their legs unless they start falling. But when did we stop allowing our children to feel the pain of uncomfortable no's? Actually, my child's teacher wrote a book, Thankful for the No's. But it was the no's in your life that maybe built that resilience that we're trying to build them. And so what are we actually protecting them from if we give them everything without them having to earn it?
I'm thinking that somebody right now is listening to this and they're saying, I love what you guys are saying, but it's all great stuff. But what am I going to do when I see my child walking through the fire? I see them encountering some difficulties. Maybe they're being bullied at school. Maybe they're encountering academic stress or pressure that is being put on them, maybe even from myself. What do I do when I see my children walking through the fire? How do I manage that? Because we want them to be a grit and determination and have what it takes, but at the same time, we don't want them to be hurt. So what do we do, Trish?
You sit with them. You sit with them like you do when I've experienced grief and loss and everything. To go and sit at the edge of their bed, sit and say, this sucks, but I'm here. Is there any way I can help? Nope. Okay. Because sometimes kids might know what they think they need and they'll tell you, or like my child who had a really hard day at football and wrote a note on his door that said, leave me alone. He was not the best on the team and he wanted to sit there and just cry. And I sat there and I was like, I'm going to let you have it because this is sucky. It's really hard, but you're going to have to make a decision tonight. You're going to get up and you're going to go back to practice or you're going to quit. Your choice. I'm going to sit with you while you cry, because no offense, moms don't have a rule that says keep out of my room. You know, moms get full access, but I think what we need to do is sit with them in it and say, you're okay to cry. This is really hard. Acknowledge how hard it is for them. Ask if there's anything they think, if there's anything I can do, what is it? Nothing. Okay. Well, then I'm just going to sit here with you. That's it. What could make you feel better right now? Nothing. Okay. And then you just keep showing up for them, because I think what we need in our hardest of times is to know that we're not walking through it alone. And if you can just show up and say, I'm here for you, and then remind them. And I tell everybody, even on my podcast, and I had a guest that lost her leg. She had cancer as a 13 years old, was diagnosed with cancer, amputated her leg. And she said, I have days, and you sit down and you cry, but then you make the decision to get back up. And you just have to do that. And so regardless of if it's bullying or academics or whatever, have their days, and the weight of the world feels as heavy as it can be. Sit with your child in it, let them grieve it, feel it, whatever, and remind them that now it's their decision. How are you going to show up tomorrow? Because that's all we can do, is show up the next day and the next hour and give it the very best we can and make the next decision and know that you're not going to walk through it alone. If it's a bullying situation, if I need to go up there, I will. But if I don't, you know, just remind them that you will always have their back. But as they navigate through it, they're not navigating through it alone. I think it's invaluable to know that you are not walking alone in the process.
Wow. That's really powerful. I want to repeat all those things that I wrote down here. The one was to sit with them, just the physical presence of you being there, not even saying not. And I think if we had to say one thing to parents, if you're sitting with them, you're going to have to resist the urge to fix the problem.
Yes. Yes.
Because, you know, it's innate. This is who we, you know, I've raised you from the, you know, when you were born, you've been mine. I protect you from everything. I want to protect you from this. I don't want you to get burned.
Right.
But you're challenging us just to sit and be there with them.
Just to sit, because, you know, you've had the luxury of your lifetime to learn these lessons. This is their first lesson. And standing up for themselves or bullying. And so in order for them to learn it and it to stick for later as it builds, it's going to, you're going to have to let them sit with it. And I recently heard Simon Sinek was, he posted something and said, when people are struggling, they were doing the science of it. And they said, all you need is somebody to sit with you for 8 minutes, And all of a sudden your capacity to handle that changes. And I'm like, parents, if we could set a timer, say, I'm just going to sit here. Let them do whatever, but it's 8 minutes to vent, to struggle. Before you offer advice, just let them get it all out, because how often as adults, when we just release it all and get it all out, can we think more clearly? Oftentimes there's, I'll ask my children, I'm like, if you knew the answer, what would it be? And they're like, what? But it forces them to actually like come up with their own solution that was already in them. And we created that. We've been teaching them as parents all along, but maybe what would it be right now? Or if it was me being bullied, or if it was me struggling with this, what advice would you give me? Even my 10-year-old has something to say. And I'm like, gosh, if I was, I have a hard time being quiet, but it's the biggest challenge for me is to just sit in that moment. And even as adults, I tell my friends, I'm like, if you need 8 minutes, I'm here. You know, after seeing that video, it changed the way I show up for people in the midst of their grief, because sometimes we just need 8 minutes.
I love the second thing where you said it, very simple. This sucks, but I'm here. That's just affirming how they feel, that there's nothing wrong with the feelings that they have right now.
Right.
But then that and third thing, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say that's the hardest as adults when I work with them. They feel ashamed to feel anger or mean, because even like this sweet little Southern girl, it's like, how dare you be angry like that? And those raw emotions, I think we're taught to put them in a box. And so even children, when I'm like, how are you feeling, to get them to articulate that, they don't know words to express it. And I think we start that at a young age without even knowing it. So I think just asking, how are you feeling, and validating those emotions and allowing them to move through them, because the only way out is through, is to get, the only way on the other side of the fire is to walk through it. And that means being very honest with, I'm angry and I hate this and I never want it to change, and being willing to sit there. But that's also, I think, why I mentioned the mentors, because sometimes as a parent, it's like, I can't hear this, because they might be struggling with real things like drugs or very hard, real things that as a parent, we do not want them to die. And I hate that. I watched my mom struggle with that after losing my brother. It was the hardest thing to watch. So you need a village of people that believe what you believe, that love your children, that are willing to speak life into them when maybe it's hard for you to hear the pain they're actually feeling.
Wow. That's powerful. And I love the last one too. And teaching them, you model this, that you just keep showing up. So you are teaching that, hey, this sucks. I don't like it either, but we got to keep showing up. We can't run and hide from this. That's so powerful. Those three simple things to be able to identify that. Woo. It's chilling. It gives me chills to just think about the power that we can do this.
It really is. And I think it's funny. I didn't experience a lot of them till my adult life. And looking backwards, I was like, what would it have changed had I had somebody when, you know, my dad was doing this or whatever. And it was, this sucks comment was funny because somebody gave me a card when my brother died and wrote this sucks on the front. And I was like, this is the greatest card I've ever received, because it felt like somebody saw how I really felt, because it wasn't proper. It wasn't the kind thing to say. It was like, I'm so sorry. This is just hard for you. And I thought, how powerful would it be if the friend or the cancer diagnosis or the sickness, or I don't know how to study for college, I'm not sure what college to go to. Like, dang, that's hard. Just don't have the same day twice. Sit in it, feel all the range of emotions, but get up and change that the next day. Don't keep sitting in it for too long, because then that there's another cycle that we don't need to get into.
You know, by teaching them grit and determination, we're hoping to instill in them confidence. But I had a friend that says before they can have confidence, they've got to have courage.
Yeah.
And that kind of relates me back to, you said you do a workshop for moms and daughters on courage. Tell me what's involved with that, because that also, this is all kind of being woven together. And I was like, oh, this is cool. This is why I don't send questions out, because I have no idea where we're going. And it's better than my preconceived thoughts would have been. So,
yeah. Oh, I love it too. So especially like courage and confidence are such a, it's funny because you can't have courage unless you're completely terrified. You have to have fear in order to be courageous. Because if you're not scared, then it doesn't really take courage. You're just going to do it and you're already confident. So we have to, one, feel terrified. Okay. So it has to scare us. And then confidence doesn't come until there's repetition. So you're never confident with anything the first time. So you're terrified and you're trying to start something new. And we're like, I want to be courageous and I want to be confident. But nobody talks about the fact that you're going to have to do it afraid, very, very afraid to get the confidence. And sometimes that is something as simple. And this moms and daughters workshop, I always do this. I make them do a dance party and it is the funniest thing to me because we'll play music from both eras and I'll make them dance. And how many people are like, heck no. And it's the fastest way to remind them that number one, you're terrified to dance in front of people. Number one, but think about how your daughter might feel to talk to you about something that her girlfriends were talking about. And it's maybe feeling some kind of way. It's the same feeling that this is really uncomfortable. I don't know how my mom's going to take it. You know, moms are like, I don't know how people are going to look at me. And I try to remind them that we're not that different after all. That as a mother, I might feel insecure about doing something, but daughters feel insecure in a different way. But fear is that key factor in order to build that courage. You've got to have fear present because when you step into courage, you're doing it afraid. And then when you do it consistently over and over and over again, you build confidence. And so I think that we have to remind ourselves that as I step on stage or whether that's pursuing a new dream or having the hard conversation, it's always uncomfortable and scary at first. But when you do it, you're like, oh my gosh, that's the courage muscle. And then when you say, hey, I talked to mom about this hard thing and we worked through the mess and then we did it the next time. And then we did it the next time. Now I've got a best friend that I'm not afraid to tell anything to. And that's where confidence comes in. Then when you have the confidence that you've got people at your back, you can show up in the world very differently because you know who you are. So it's this cycle that I think that we don't talk about the fear and uncertainty enough because everybody loves confidence and courage. They're beautiful words. But in order for those to be present, it's consistently showing up terrified. So, oh God, am I going to be good enough? I'm not sure. Let's do it again. And then you're like, dang, I'm really good at this. And I think that's what I think people mistake is that confidence doesn't look like I'm on stage with beautiful makeup and I look wonderful. It is being authentically who you are in any situation, even when you're afraid. That is where I think true confidence comes in. And that is always on the inside. And so I think it's just this hand in hand where we have to tell people, stop being so afraid because this is that courage muscle that we want to build. And it can't be built without fear. So keep going.
The thing that kept entering my mind when you were saying that was the book of Joshua. How many times in that book it talks about be strong and take courage, you know, and be courageous, you know, be strong and take courage. Be not,
yes.
The over and over, not just once, but it's just the theme of that book of leading a group of people into an unknown land and having to face adversaries that are overwhelming from what they seem.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's just what kept recurring. And then when you talked about repetition, I was like, oh yeah, it's mentioned so many times in there.
It is.
The writer, God speaking through the writer. Hey, keep going. You got to do this.
Well, and then look at the context with which it's like, be strong and courageous. It wasn't as he was laying in the bed casually listening to the Holy Spirit. It was in a situation where they needed it. My boys, when I tell them, boys, what is the Bible verse? My son was afraid to go upstairs and all the lights were off in the house. I'm the youngest. And he was afraid to go in the dark. He's like, no, I don't want to go up there by myself. And I was like, this is your house. Like, this is your house. And I was like, Eli, what does the Bible say? And I asked him and it was like, be strong and courageous. Did I tell him that because he was not scared? No, he was terrified. So I had to remind him of the strength. And again, like I said, courage isn't built without the fear. He had to step into that dark room fearlessly, you know, and that's where this courage muscle is built. So
yeah, it's funny you said it because I grew up on a farm as well. And our church was on the edge of our farm. And when we would go on Sunday nights, they would do these things after church. And I wanted to go home. And my parents were like, okay, here's the keys. Go home. You can let yourself in. And I'd have to walk through the field to there in the dark. And if you've never,
yeah.
For those of you who live in the city, you don't get this. But if you ever walked across a field on a farm in the middle of the night, it's dark.
It's
and
dark.
I would make up a song about, you know, you have nothing to fear but fear itself. You know, that quote. Yeah. I would just make up a song as I would walk through and kind of scream it out.
Yeah.
And after I'd done it after a while, I didn't even think about it. It's not like I consciously stopped singing that. It's just that one day I'd been doing it so much that I was like, ah, there's nothing out here. There's nothing out here at all. Because I remember the very first time, very vividly, every tree, bush, you know, everything. There's something behind there. There could be a bear. I'm like, there's bears in my area. Where did that come from? There's probably a grizzly over there. There's a grizzlies in central North Carolina. Where am I coming up with this stuff?
Imagination. And that's where fear does. Isn't it funny how we create giants that do not exist because we are terrified? And that I just think is so much in life that we're like, we make all of the things up and most of them don't even exist. But again, you didn't build the confidence except for showing up consistently through the field, facing the giants, if you will, for lack of a better analogy, and just and going for it. But I feel it. It's very dark out here. Very, very dark out here. So I still haven't built the courage to go by myself through this cow field. I'm like, boys, y'all go.
But you know, as I got older, and I'm thinking about this again, I've never really thought about it in this context, but as I got older, it became a joy and fun to walk through the farm at night because I could appreciate everything that was there and I could appreciate the stars more and the way that the light would shine on this field and the way that the, you know, glistened off of this. And I could hear sounds that before would scare me, but now I knew what they were and oh my gosh, that's, I can hear the cows way over here. Or, you know, I can hear the, you know, the animal moving in there. It's probably this. I know it's not a pack of wild wolves coming through because there are no pack of wild wolves here.
Right. But like a full moon, how do you appreciate how much a full moon can light up a field unless you've been through it in total darkness? And it's funny just even having this conversation. It just reminds you that that's exactly the analogy of life. It's walking through the dark, the fear, the uncertainty, the dark places. I told a friend, we take notes in the dark places because then you share with somebody else what those notes were, how they can get through it. You know, how do we get through the field at night? You just walk one foot in front of the other. It's what you do. You take in and you decide that there's nothing here. Here are the facts. This is the truth. And I'm going to move forward. And just in faith. This is also that faith muscle. How do you build that? It's by doing it consistently over time.
And walking with them when they're, and being available to walk with your teen, your child, maybe in those first few times to help them create a courage. Because again, as we're using this story analogy, I'm thinking about even before that, when I walked by myself, my dad would walk me through the farm and I would be right there with them. And I still was afraid, but because he was there, I shared his confidence. I had courage because of his confidence.
Yes. I talk about borrowed confidence all the time, is that you find the people around who believe in you that are like, you've got this. And you're like, you're crazy. And it's like, no, you're not. And then you like borrow the confidence that they have. But it's my husband, who is 6'4", 220, military man, walking with my boys. They can do anything in the middle of the woods at midnight with that man by his side. And I'm like, okay. You know, and it's like you said, it's walking with them until they build it. And then sometimes he'll say, all right, guys, go do it on your own. I'll give $5 to whoever touches the oak tree in the middle of the field. And they're like, no, I'm not doing it. And little by little, they begin to see that he's not going to let anything happen to them. And I think as parents, continually staying there and showing up and being willing, like I said, they're going through things with social media that we didn't have. There's just age. It is what it is. Their kids are going to go through something that they didn't experience. So if we sit and just allow them to feel their emotions and not tell them that's crazy because it's social media and it's so silly, to them it's everything. So maybe it's their world and their peers. And if you sit with them in it, it builds that trust. It builds that presence. It's like, man, they're never going to leave. They're never going to go anywhere. I'm not going to have feelings that are too big for them. And I think that's the safety that we all really long for. You know, whether we go to church or whatever, is to know that it's going to be okay and that these are normal feelings. But I think presence says everything. And you know, with grief, you know how if you know anybody that lost somebody, everybody grieves differently. Well, I think everybody handles hardship differently. And so maybe we haven't learned how our kids navigate hardship. Like, you know, my brother used to run away from people. He felt so convicted. He hated to disappoint people. So we had to learn how, as sisters and my mom, how to navigate that. And I think giving the freedom to say, maybe our kids are grieving or learning or growing differently than I thought. So what does that look like? But you know, again, that takes presence and sitting.
Wow. We got a workshop. Me and you got to put together here. This is some, mm-hmm. So the walking through the farm workshop. I love this.
Yeah, I'm here for it all day.
So how, I hope, well, if they've stayed with us this long, they obviously are finding some value in what we're talking about here. So how can they connect with you to learn more about getting the skill set, learning some of the mindset to help them walk through the fire? What can they do to connect with you?
Well, like I said, you can go on the website, trishafraley.com. I have resources and you can connect with me there. I am all over my name on Instagram, Trisha Fraley. I connect with a lot of people via DMs there just because I'll share a story and they just want to share. And I find that we kind of connect there. So if people want to reach out, you can listen to the podcast. You can go on the website to find resources and download tools, or you can just message me directly because I really love to have conversations with people, especially when they're struggling, because sometimes, like even like today, if you heard one sentence, then this podcast was worth it. And I think the world is just can give us what we're looking for if we just open our eyes to hear it. So if you just want to have a conversation, you can email, Instagram, website, whichever you decide, and I'll be happy to respond.
And you do have a resource in which they can purchase a book. So if you want to tell them about your book.
Yes, yes. So I have a couple. There's one that was a collaboration that you can message me directly for. It's Grit and Grace and ordered on Amazon. And it's stories of women who've overcome the unthinkable and how they've handled it. And then I've got your new favorite F word is actually, we're going to be releasing it in the next couple of months. I've got pre-orders and different classes I've been doing up until then, but it is something that you can sign up for to get pre-orders for. And it is, how do we, I mean, obviously it's a very lovely title, but sometimes the first things that come to mind when we face hard things are not very pleasant thoughts. And so what if fire is your new favorite F word and we change the way we look at that hard thing, the hard decision, the uncomfortable situation. And so it's a whole book of my journey and how you can apply simple farm analogies to your own fires. So a lot of farm stories, kind of like the one we just talked about today, which is crazy.
we just went in a direction we had no clue where it was going. So, hey, for our
I know.
For our ag audience, they are to love this episode.
Well, the fun part is I did not grow up on a farm, and it's a running joke. I was used to be called the pretty, pretty princess. That was what people would call me. And so my whole family laughs that I'm like the chicken lady here. I'm like, I've got chickens. They're like, whoever in a million years thought Trisha would be the one with chickens? And so it's funny because, like, as I tell young girls, I'm like, don't be afraid that something might change in you all along. I used to wear, when I learned to ride a bike, I wore a hairnet. Okay. So my hair didn't get messed up. And here I am living on a farm. So I'm just saying there's hope for everybody out there, and that your world, just because you feel like it's falling apart now, you never know where God's going to take it.
I love the message that we've discussed today of giving some practical tips for parents, teachers even, and coaches on how they can help those that they lead or parent themselves as they struggle going through the fire. Because there's no way that you're going to have a child that's going to grow up in this day and age and not encounter something.
Right.
And not verbalize it. So I think we all do in some degrees, but today it seems, and I think it's a large part because our stories are put on social media so much. We're so open on what we share that it causes youth to be more involved and seem to and grow more. So I love what we've shared today. So thank you. Thank you for this. This has been powerful. I love this conversation.
Me too. Me too. I could go all day.
Yeah. And audience, thank you for being with us as well. Listen, as I said a while ago, if you've stuck with us for almost 40 minutes, you've obviously found some value in what you've heard. You've obviously loved this, or you're related to one of us and you just want to support us. Either way, someone you know needs to hear this message. You know someone who's not connected with us already, and they need to hear this. So please like and share and comment on this. Share is the most important thing, making sure it gets in the hands of the person who needs to hear this message that can give them some tips. And we really appreciate your support as you share. And we'll see you again very soon on another episode of the Generation Youth Podcast.
And there you have it, another impactful episode of the Generation Youth Podcast. To all of our listeners out there, remember to hit that subscribe button on your preferred podcast platform so you can never miss an episode. Want to be a part of the Generation Youth community? follow us on all of our social media platforms. We'll keep you connected with all of our upcoming episodes and inspiring initiatives. You're not just a listener here, you're a catalyst for change. Together, we're building a future filled with promise, potential, and endless possibilities. This journey is just starting, so keep tuning in, keep growing, and let's continue uplifting our youth one episode at a time. Thank you for joining us today, and until next time, let's keep sparking inspiration and igniting the future.